Hey everyone, I'm Coach Al Lyman.
And I'm Dr. Kurt Strecker, and we are the experts behind Pursuit Athletic Performance, one of the nation's cutting-edge sports training companies with an outstanding reputation for getting athletes just like you stronger, more powerful, and faster, all while keeping you uninjured and in the game year after year.
Our weekly podcast will share honest, effective training tips and information, from the nuances of triathlon to the rigors of ultra running, as well as the latest in sports medicine and nutrition. Our goal is to explode the training myths and untruths marketed to athletes and to teach you how to truly unleash your ultimate potential. Be sure to subscribe for free updates of our proven strategies at pursuitathleticperformance.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. I'm Dr. Kurt Strecker and I am joined here by my partner in crime, the esteemed and astounding Coach Al Lyman. Coach, how are you doing on this sunny, somewhat snowy, afternoon here in Old Saybrook, Connecticut?
I'm doing fantastic, Doc. I'm doing wonderful. I mean, you know, I'll get through this winter, right? I mean, I'll get through it. Yeah, it's one of those snowy days here. Spring is around the corner.
I like the way you're thinking.
Yeah.
We got about 12 inches on the way. He's saying spring's around the corner. See if it's melted by the time we have our spring camp.
I know. It's interesting. We always begin our podcast with a look out at the weather here. It's weird, right?
Got to start somewhere.
You have to start somewhere.
Right on.
Yeah.
So outside of the weather, the topic today is nutrition. And we're going to talk specifically about racing nutrition. Is that the plan today?
It sounds like a plan. Sure, why not? I mean, you know, in the middle of a snowstorm in January, why not talk
That's
about
exactly
racing
right.
nutrition?
That's exactly right. You know, I heard the greatest new fueling strategy. It's snow with maple syrup, but you can only do it in the cold events, so, you know, you get that going for you.
That's not going to work in Hawaii.
Yeah. That's right. So we get a lot of questions, you get a lot of questions from the training end, obviously, about nutrition, about racing nutrition. And, you know, it strikes me that most folks are looking for a cookbook, as if, you know, you can call up Coach Al and say, hey, Coach Al, you know, I'm doing Ironman CDA and I need a fueling strategy. And then you would maybe pull that PDF up and send it off to them and then they're all good. But it's maybe not the way it goes. Can you comment on that?
Well, Doc, you know, how much time do we have, right? we can get into some good discussions about the topic. You know, I think it's interesting, first of all, I'll say up front, it may sound a little counterintuitive to talk about racing nutrition in January, but the truth is, I think for a lot of athletes out there that are racing in a few months, they've certainly got to begin to think about how they're going to move from the place they are now to race day with a solid strategy in place and with a solid plan. For us, we're working right now with a lot of athletes that are doing our detox, that may have come off of our having done the comprehensive metabolic profile. And what inevitably happens in that process is folks take a lot of sugar out of their diet, they begin to clean it up, and that leaves many folks in a bit of a quandary, because when you clean your diets and take a lot of sugar out, you then immediately bump up against this idea of, well, wait a second, I've used sugar for training and I've used sugar for racing, so how am I going to move to a place where I can arrive on race day with a strategy? So I think it is a good topic to discuss in January. And certainly, without question, the idea of sugar, no sugar, low carb, high carb, low fat, high fat, it's done many different ways out there today. And this topic is so popular among blogs, on websites, athletes, pro athletes, age groupers, researchers, people that just love to talk and tweet, as well as scientists doing a lot of research, a lot of new products coming out, it does leave athletes with a lot of questions in their mind about where's the place to go.
Well, absolutely. There's no shortage of advice out there. Whether you're opening up, the latest and greatest in a triathlon magazine or a running magazine or just surfing the web, there's a lot of people who are willing to give some advice on something that may have worked for them or someone they were working with. I like the way you describe the fact that you've got to get from now to race day, which may be several months away. But now, just like in the off-season training, right? In the off-season training, we're working on developing the frame, working on the core, maybe as you describe, raising the roof in terms of fitness, getting people faster and then being able to get longer as time goes on here as they get into their race seasons. Same sort of approach with nutrition. If you're a person who's used to having the goos and the gels or a sort of a constant influx of simple carbs or sugars, you've got to work to get there. You can't flip a switch, can you?
No, you really can't, Doc, that's for sure. I guess the first thing or first place we really want to get to, which really addresses your original question or comment, is really this idea that there's no single recipe booklet for every single person out there.
And there you have it, folks. Have a great day.
That's it, exactly, man. And everybody wants it. I mean, gosh, I used to think, hey, if I could buy a single document or get someone to give me a single document that would tell me how to make $1 million in the stock market in a year, wouldn't that be great, right? And just go ahead and go through a litany of topics that might be analogous to this. But the bottom line is the human body is very complex, somewhat mysterious, and we've all got to go through a process of experimentation and practice to learn what works best for us. And I think one of the messages we really want to share with our listeners today is that we move through that process of experimentation and practice from a baseline philosophy, from a set of principles that I think we can come back to. It's the same for you and I with respect to movement, right? We know that everybody's got an individual movement signature to some degree, their own limitations in terms of flexibility or stability, but ultimately we start with a set of principles, a philosophy, and then we move forward from there. I know that when athletes begin to think about fueling for their races, especially an important race that you've invested a lot of money and time into, and you know that if you don't get the fueling right, you're not going to be successful. You can get really anxious and nervous right up front, and something which should be relatively simple becomes complex pretty quickly. So I'm going to encourage our listeners as they begin to think about these things to try to keep drilling things down to simpler rather than more complex. And that works both in terms of concepts or ideas as well as the molecular structure of the stuff they put in their mouths, right? And there really are some fundamental concepts or principles that we always come back to. So first and foremost, no single recipe that will work for everybody. What works for me, Doc, may not work for you. What worked for Lisbeth at the Hawaii Ironman on the way to winning her age group title a fourth time, what worked for her may not necessarily work for another woman who's in her age group, who may even be from the same part of the world. We all have very unique bodies, and I should throw out there, because you and I talk about this all the time, we're always drilling things back down to a more basic level because we understand if the basics are not working, then the things above and beyond the basics won't work either. And that certainly relates to the gut. For whatever reason, gut issues seem to be more predominant, whether it's the quality of the food that we eat or the predominance of packaged, processed foods in many of our diets, whatever it may be.
Stress, whether it's training or emotional or work.
Right. We look at gut health first in a perfect world. Ideally, we want to see is what you're putting into your mouth being absorbed and being processed. Certainly anything that's not working under normal circumstances is not going to work in a highly stressful situation, which is what a race is, right? So that's one of those basic concepts, this idea that as intensity and stress rises, the ability for our bodies to handle and digest and absorb whatever we put into our mouths is going to go down, right? It's an inverse relationship.
Absolutely. And so, you know, really you've got to start from a place of a healthy gut, right? If you're going into racing season and you don't have a healthy gut, then you're really at a disadvantage. And you're never going to be able to, as that stress rises, you're never going to be able to get everything out of. If you're taking in 200 calories an hour, as you describe, maybe you're getting 7 of them, right?
Yeah.
If that gut's not working, maybe you're not doing a good job getting it into the bloodstream. So, yeah. You know, I think that's an interesting point as well. And, you know, how do you figure that out? How do you decide, you know, if you've got a healthy gut? Some of the things that we look for, right, dysbiosis. Right, intestinal dysbiosis is a big deal, and we find it very commonly, and we find it very commonly among endurance athletes. And you know, I think that I don't know if anybody's absolutely elucidated the mechanism, but I think that you know, when you consider how much stress is on the gut in long training or long racing, and the blood is being shunted away from the gut to the muscles. The gut is essentially ischemic. It doesn't have much blood flow in this case, and it's easy to see where, you know, that stress is coming from. So, you know, if the gut isn't functioning as efficiently as it could be, then that certainly is going to throw a wrench in the works. And I think that from our perspective, that's really a place to start.
Yeah, and it can be exacerbated by an individual athlete using basically a shotgun approach with their fueling strategies, right? And so that's one of those things that creates more complexity and therefore makes things much more difficult. When I'm doing consultation with athletes and we're looking at their strategy or their plan, or that could be prior to a race or after a race when we're beginning to look at their results and trying to determine how they could have done a better job or what may have gone wrong, inevitably what we often find is there's a real hodgepodge of different kinds of fuels and products within a certain period of time on the race course. You know, so someone pulls into an aid station on an ultra run and they don't feel well, so they look for a product to give them an instant lift or boost, when the reality is they may not feel well for any one of a number of reasons that may or may not be related to the fuel type or even, you know, the amount of fuel they've taken in. But the minute you add any one of a number of products, some of which have only been developed in the last year or two, mm-hmm. who knows the long-term implications of some products that we see on the shelves now, right? Because there's a lot of marketing and all of that behind those products. Who knows the long-term impact of some of those products and what's actually in many of them. But when you take three or four different kinds of things and you put that into a system that's under a tremendous amount of stress, and then ask for some sort of instantaneous improvements to occur,
sure.
You know, it's a recipe for disaster. So it really does go back to, you know, simpler is better. As we often say with the detox for folks, when they finish that period of time, however long it may be, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, 4 weeks, they add in one food at a time and see the reaction that food will have on them. So when I look back on my own training over the last 15 to 20 years as a triathlete and runner, where I began certainly to think more about fueling over the last dozen years or so, but I would pick a fuel and or strategy to experiment with and give myself some time to see the reaction I had to that, and then try to glean some kind of objective information from that, trying to remove as many variables as possible. And then from there, you know, maybe try something else or make an adjustment the next time I go out. And I think this is an important lesson for people to learn. Every single training session that you do is an opportunity to experiment, right? So we come from a baseline of principles and a philosophy, and to reiterate for many of our listeners who might not have heard this, that philosophy begins with enhancing our body's ability to burn fat as a fuel, not be on a sugar drip on a daily basis, not rely upon blood glucose to fuel the muscle cell. We want to be in fat-burning mode. That means normal insulin levels, and try to maintain as much of that normal hormonal status as we can. That's our baseline. But from that baseline, we can step out and away and begin to experiment with different makeups of fuel, fuel types, concentration. And we have to keep good records. We've got to really understand what we're putting into our mouths, and we have to resist the temptation to make assumptions along the way. I had a conversation today with an athlete who was speaking about some prior GI issues that he has had in some of the races he's done. And so he was seeking a different fuel to use, and he wanted me to tell him what to use. And I said, well, wait a second. How are you not, how can you not be sure that your issues with that fuel you were using before wasn't related to calorie intake, to total calorie intake? You can have the perfect fuel for your body. You can have it right in your hand. But if you take too much of it at one time, your body's not gonna do well with that, right? So it's not just the fuel type. It's not just the fuel product name. It's also the concentration of that fuel. It's your hydration status at the time, electrolyte status as well, and a host of other things, including the dysbiosis that you alluded to earlier. All of these elements, you know, play a role in how your body is able to handle a fuel, process it, and absorb it, especially under race-like conditions where that can get obviously pretty chaotic.
And as we discussed earlier, you have to like it, right? You could have the best fuel on the planet, but if you can't choke it down, it's not getting you anywhere, right? So you really should, you know, as you described, have the opportunity to experiment and with each of the products that you might be working toward.
You know, I'll say one thing on your keep whatever
yeah,
thought
no,
you
that's,
had in mind, but
that's pretty much it.
You know, the idea of liking something is a precarious topic to discuss with an athlete, because when we're talking about fueling in a race or fueling a training session, it's not the same thing as picking out your favorite bottle of wine, you know?
No, we're not talking about dessert.
You got to be able to get it down.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it isn't about taste necessarily. I always remember, and I will sometimes discuss this, you know, coming into special needs area in Kona up there at Javi, and my bottle of sustained energy had been sitting in the heat for about the previous 6 hours.
Nothing's going to taste good at that point.
Nothing's going to taste good at that point. Now, someone would say, hey, you know, the bottom line is if you want to do long course racing or ultra racing, you got to have a pretty strong stomach. And I think that's true. You know, I think if your stomach's very sensitive to taste and texture, you're going to have more difficulty in long races or anything stressful, right?
Sure.
But by and large, you're absolutely right. To your point, before you can know whether a fuel is going to work for you on the race course, you got to try to see if you can drink it on the couch.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? If you can't gag it down there, chances are it's not going to.
That's right, not at 104 degrees or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly right.
That's it. That's a lot of great information, Coach. I think that's a really nice sort of broad overview of a strategy, right, and an approach and a way to start thinking now in the winter, in the off season, about what you're going to do between now and then. And I really like the idea of figuring out how you're going to get from here to there.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And you could be listening to this in April and saying, okay, how am I going to get from here to there, right? Or it could be September,
right?
But you've still got to make a plan to get from wherever you are, you know, when you listen to this podcast, to wherever you're going to be when you get on that bike or out on the run course. And that's really, that's a key element here.
Yeah, it is for sure. So as we wrap up our talk today, Doc, why don't we leave our listeners with a few more of those basic concepts? what we think of, or certainly what we talk about and discuss with our team, some of the basic concepts that I think you can use as a platform upon which to begin to do your experimentation. Now, my experience, to start with, I find that most athletes do well with around 200 calories per hour when they're fueling on the bike, as a general rule. The bike's a good platform for fueling. It's easier to get calories in. If you're 6'4", 270 pounds, you may be able to absorb more than 200 per hour. If you're 95 pounds, you may not be able to take in 200 per hour. I happen to know a pretty good triathlete who did pretty well in a pretty important race, I'm not saying any names, who did about 170 or 180 calories per hour on the bike and ended up winning her age group. That's not a lot of calories. She's a small woman. I think a lot of people get into trouble trying to take in too much, and they do it out of fear of bonking or running out of energy. You know, I'm gonna stuff, it's like, you know, a storm's coming, so you're at the gas station and you're overfilling your gas tank and thinking, I don't wanna run out of gas, right? And the gas is dripping out onto the ground, and the owner of the station's yelling at you, right? So 200 calories, I think, is a really, really good baseline. Some other important basic concepts. I think liquid is generally better than solid. It's just assimilated and absorbed a little bit more easy, a little bit easier on your gut, because there's less digestion that will need to take place. Intensity and difficult, challenging environmental conditions are an inverse relationship to calorie intake. So the harder you're going, and the hotter or more humid the race conditions are, the less you're gonna be able to take in. It's just as simple as that. You know, the analogy is, you got no problems eating 4,000 calories an hour on a Thanksgiving day when you're sitting on your couch, right? I mean, the intensity is low, not making many demands on your body, and you can certainly get plenty of those in. You have to make sure that hydration and electrolyte status is where it needs to be. Those are separate podcasts, but things really begin there. If you've got a real distortion in hydration status, if you're dehydrated and or, for whatever reason, depleted in electrolytes, that's going to impact absorption in many of the same ways of the other things that we've discussed. So if you start with some of those basic concepts, keeping things simple, trying to avoid using multiple products at any one time, thinking less is more, and of course coming from a place of being a better fat burner to begin with, then you're going to have a great start on developing hopefully a simple strategy that will work well for you. I think, you know, in wrapping this up, Doc, the message that we want to leave with people is that while long course racing in particular is definitely an eating drinking contest, as far as, you know, you have to get those things right if you're going to have success, there's no way that you can eat anything on the race course that's going to take the place of a smart daily nutrition strategy that's based predominantly on good fats, quality protein, and quality carbohydrate in the form of vegetables and fruits, whole foods, right? Not processed foods. There's no magic in a bag or magic in a box on race day that's going to overcome eating like crap at every other time. That's for sure. So I think if the athletes that are listening start with some of those basic ideas and concepts, they'll have some success. If you've got any questions out there, by all means, folks, pass them on. Let us know and we'll discuss them in a future podcast.
Sounds great, Coach. I think that's the way to go at it.
Excellent. All right, brother, break out your shovel.
Break out your shovel.
I think we got some snow coming.
All right. Hope it's sunny where you are, and we look forward to seeing you again or interacting with you again on our next Pursuit Athletic Performance podcast. Stay sunny inside, folks.
Thank you for tuning in to the Pursuit Athletic Performance podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review here on iTunes. Be sure to head over to PursuitAthleticPerformance.com to subscribe for free tips and strategies to help you get strong, get fast, and unleash the amazing athlete